The World Central Kitchen Cookbook by Jose Andres.
You did it.
I did it.
Hey, Victoria.
Hi, Johnny.
Long time no talk.
Yeah.
What you been up to? Tell me everything.
Sadly.
In the next 30 seconds.
Oh, my God. Sadly, I haven't been up to much because I'm a loser. How about yourself?
The same. I think we've been plenty busy.
Yeah, that's true.
We have been enjoying our summer.
We have been
taking
so busy.
A much-deserved break.
We've been so busy that we just have not found time to do this.
We don't need to make excuses.
I know.
You know, once the big bucks start rolling in and we're getting paid to do this podcast, then we can do this on a regular basis. But, you know, we're doing what we can.
Keep dreaming, sir.
Yeah. Hey, it's episode 93. You know what I told you? Once you get to 100, then it's like syndication. That's fat syndication money starts rolling. Like, we're going to be just like the cast of Friends.
Yeah, totally.
Matthew Perry, RIP. Is that who it was?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I guess that's what's happened recently.
Let's see what else. Not to be a total bummer, but in sad news, we had to say goodbye to Miss Olive.
Oh, my God. That's how long it's been, huh?
It has been that long.
Oh.
We said goodbye to her this summer.
Yeah.
She had an amazing last day.
Yep.
We took her down to the lake. She got to eat ice cream, the real ice cream.
Yep.
Spent lots of snuggle times.
It was the best.
It was lovely.
And regular listeners to the show, which would include like maybe a couple people, would probably remember the episode where she would knock over a drink glass and we had to abruptly quit and resume the episode the following day because we were like trying to make dinner and we had
all
to clean
you can
up
hear
broken
is
glass.
Like crash and then I'm like, oh.
She was good at knocking over stuff.
Yes, she was.
That was a unique talent that she had.
I vote that you go back and find that clip and then just tag it on to the end of the podcast.
That'll be a regular feature.
So people who actually, you know, sit through the very end get to be treated with that
little
gem.
Treat.
Yes.
I like it.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, welcome to episode 93 of Tasty Pages, a podcast from Cooking the Books. If you go to our website, which is just wecookbooks.com, click on the store tab. We still have an Amazon affiliate page there. I actually added a cookbook or two to the list, but we've got a few lists there, including our favorite cookbooks.
We've kind of been neglecting everything, by the way.
We've been busy. Okay. I'm not making excuses. Just life gets in the way sometimes.
I'm not busy. I'm just lazy.
Speak for yourself. I've been doing deals.
Doing deals.
You don't know.
Shut the fuck up.
But yeah, you go to that store tab. That will direct you to our Amazon.com affiliate page. And from there, you can make a purchase. You going to be okay over there? We'll get a little something in return. You'll get something you were probably going to buy anyway. It's probably the best, most immediate way that you can support the fine work we're doing here. You could also just, you know, say thank you on the back of a $50 bill and send that to us in the mail. Are we set up to take cryptocurrency? Do we take Bitcoin yet? We got to start that up. You going to be okay over there?
Oh, my God.
What else has been going on? Oh, we got sober.
We did.
Yay!
Well, California sober, I guess.
Yeah.
Yes, it's been 46 days.
Ooh, 46.
Yes.
You got the app on your phone?
I have. I have a little day tracker that just keeps tally of my days. It's also very. You can be way more involved with it if you want, but I don't care to do that, so I just keep track of my days.
Yeah, and I think this was a decision we kind of arrived at just quietly and without much fanfare. There was no like dramatic event that that happened, thankfully. I didn't like run someone over with a car. I didn't like get into a bar fight or anything like that, you know, because that's so like me. It's so on brand for Johnny. You're like punching people in bars after a night of drinking. But yeah, I think we were just like, we arrived at that point, and it's certainly easier to do as a couple when we have the support of your partner. But I guess that's all I need to say. You read a book that I think had a big impact.
Yes.
I have yet to read it.
There is a book. I highly recommend it for anyone. Well, part of the reason why people have a hard time drinking is because have a hard time quitting drinking is because it's like that FOMO. Like every social event is like focused around alcohol, basically, in our society. But this book kind of reframes all that for you and kind of reframes the way you view alcohol. And it's crazy because it made me do a total mind switch. And I haven't been like, oh, I could really like go for a glass of wine right now. Like it hasn't happened. Anyway, this book is called This Naked Mind by Annie Grace. I cannot recommend it enough. You know, whether you're just like thinking of quitting drinking or whatever, or you think you have a problem,
I'm looking forward to checking it out. It's in my stack of books. I've got a bunch of books on my nightstand. I got to get to that one.
And funnily enough,
is that a word? Funnily enough.
Funnily, it is now. I think it's a word.
Again with the funnily. Continue.
It was a book that was sent to us by a publisher.
Not even really a food-related one, but.
Which is
more
weird
of a self-help book.
It came out, I think, in like 2014.
Oh, so it's not even a new
it's
book.
Yeah, it's an old book.
Huh.
So.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, you know, since we have quit imbibing for the time being, our regular What Are We Drinking episode is probably going to have to be discontinued because I'm drinking a Lagunitas hop water refresher, berry lemon.
I mean, hop water is kind of awesome.
Yeah, I think so.
But we don't.
What are you drinking?
Oh, hold on. But we don't need to be spending money on that because, pro tip, if you like the hop water, just go buy like a soda stream or whatever, like a water carbonator, and then get some hop extract and you can make your own hop water.
That's what we're going to try.
Yes.
I can't co-sign that yet because we haven't tried it. What if it's not good?
Well, just don't get the.
That hop extract is kind
Amarillo.
Of expensive too. So,
well, comparatively to like a 12 pack of hop water, no, it's not.
Or we could just, you know, be regular humans
and just
drink
regular water.
Only hop water for me.
We're such assholes.
And I'm very selective about the strain of hops.
Actually, I am.
Yep.
I don't like the Amarillo
hop snob. What are you drinking over there?
Ooh.
You've got a
yes.
kombucha that tastes like pickle juice.
It does not taste like.
It totally tastes like pickle juice.
It does not taste like pickle juice.
I mean, I'm not opposed to drinking pickle juice. I mean, I told you the other day that's kind of a thing. Like at a bar, like there's like, it's I think it's like bourbon with
and
a pickle juice.
Pickleback, yeah.
Yeah, pickleback. Not to be confused with Nickelback.
Right?
Cause like,
oh, I mean, which one is worse? I think Nickelback is
Pickleback
the worst of the two.
Pickleback is not universally hated by the population.
Okay, anyway, so what I am drinking, not pickle juice, thank you. It's a kombucha, and it's a special seasonal thing called Living in Gratitude, and it has apple, turmeric, carrot, and other assorted spices.
I said that ingredient list looks pretty long from a distance. Like it's got a lot of stuff going on in it. So pickle juice is probably the number one ingredient on there. Oh, on a related note, we're currently in progress of working through this. It's a book called Good Drinks by Julia Bainbridge. Subtitle, Alcohol-Free Recipes for When You're Not Drinking for Whatever Reason. So perhaps you had a recent surgery. Perhaps you're trying to make healthy life changes. Perhaps, just perhaps, you overindulged at a food and wine event, slipped on some ice outside, hit your head, and lost your wallet. Hypothetically speaking, of course. I can't say that any of this has happened to me, but
I was gonna be a total brat and be in earlier and be like, oh, like losing your wallet when you're talking about no big
But and to be fair, like that was like last winter. And that wasn't my bottom, apparently. That wasn't where I was like, man, I should probably curtail my drinking.
Mm-mm. That was not last winter. That was the first winter that we spent here.
Oh, was it? So
yes.
It was 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Oh, so I had like a...
Because it was while your mom was still living at her house.
I didn't learn my lesson. I had to tie one on for another year and a half until, oh, well, better late than never. Let's see. What else do we got going on? What are we just finished up? You okay over there? You need me to prompt you for your lines? Line. I can just do this show myself. We can go in and post production and like overdub your giggles and laughs.
Okay. Okay.
Witty repertoire.
Okay, here's a little explainer for why there's this like weird little glitch. Because Johnny usually gives me like some just ambiguous notes, and then I'll write on them like my own notes. But this time I'm not using his notes, and I didn't want to talk about what we had just finished up because it's a bunch of one-offs. So I did not include them in my own notes.
Gotcha.
Which I... For the first time ever, I'm being really professional about it. I actually like typed them up.
Whoa.
Typed up my own separate notes.
Fancy.
See?
You got your notes in front of you there?
I do have my notes in front of me.
What's on your notes? Is it just paragraphs of how much you love me and appreciate me?
Yes, it is.
I thought so.
It is. Okay. So, but I do have your notes in reference. We've been doing a bunch of one-offs, which means just like kind of briefly giving the cookbooks a peruse,
well,
and choosing and one thing out of them.
A majority of cookbooks are released during this time every year, like right before the holiday season, because they do...
October, November.
They do make...
It starts getting really busy.
For a
yeah.
lot of people with the holidays coming up. And so everyone wants to take advantage of that opportunity. And so we've been flooded with books, which we're very grateful for. And we want to try and give as many people, a little bit of a mention as possible. So we've been just kind of working through the books. And there are books that, for a variety of reasons, might not resonate with us, or we're just not able to do because we do have some dietary restrictions
yeah.
and stuff like that.
Like,
so
if there's a sheer amount of stuff that I can't eat, or
like
that
pasta,
like has to be heavy
bread.
Well, pasta is fine because, I mean, within reason,
yeah.
like I can substitute gluten-free pasta.
Yep.
But like when you're talking about, oh, we're gonna make some artichoke ravioli. Well, I'm not gonna make my own gluten-free
no.
ravioli.
It's not happening.
I've done that several times, and no thank you.
And we just coming out of the month of October, we just finished our annual tradition of like watching horror movies throughout the month leading up to Halloween. That was fun.
There's this guy named Mike Flanagan who has different series on Netflix.
Oh yeah,
we
went through all of them.
There, no, we haven't actually. There's Fall of the House of Usher, which we watched. Midnight Mass, I watched that.
Midnight Club.
No, there's one called Midnight Mass.
Oh, there
as
is.
Well. Yes, there is.
Oh,
that's the one that I watched without you, and it had Zach Guilford, Saracen. He was like the main.
Oh,
it was
kind of
like
Friday
focused on him. Yes. Yes.
Regular listeners will know that Victoria has got a
crazy
an appreciation
obsession.
For
oh, that's
Night
so
Lights.
Sweet that you call it an appreciation.
Yeah.
Although I'm not crazy about it like I used to be. All of the series that he has done are kind of spooky. The storytelling is really good.
Yeah, I don't think either of us are really keen on like slasher
Mm-mm.
movies and like torture porn,
Bleh.
As we call it, and stuff.
No.
But like anything that's kind of suspenseful, maybe some supernatural elements, not so much sci-fi, but if there's like ghosts involved, not really a big fan of zombies. So if it's got zombies in it,
yeah.
I'm probably not really gonna be into it, but
I'm okay with aliens too.
Yeah, but I think we saw a few alien things.
There was the one, the No One Will Save You or whatever. It was good up until the end, then it just got weird.
Yeah.
That one's on Hulu, I think.
Yeah. Well, thanks for tuning in, everyone, to Horror Movie Talk.
Oh, but cooking relating, I have been doing a lot of baking lately.
You have?
I have. I've made I made some apple spice cookies. I made brownies. I made a Japanese souffle cheesecake.
That was pretty good. That was for one of the cookbooks too. And that one will be making an appearance in our social media feed soon.
Yes. And oh, I made a French silk pie too.
And what do we got up next?
We are working on Shabbat. We're actually starting it tonight.
Yep.
By Adina Sussman. Super excited.
I know. It's been in our stack of stuff to get to for a while, and we're finally cracking open the cover.
I know. I'm so excited to work through it, but I'm also kind of bummed because the sheer amount of things that look so good in there that I can't eat, and I can't, like, there's no modifying them so that I can eat them.
Especially the baked goods.
Oh my God. I'm just like gutted. But there's still a ton of stuff in this book.
Which is the perfect segue into ba-ba-da-da. I really need to come up with like little theme music, incidental music. What's for dinner tonight?
Wow.
Right?
You said that with some gusto.
Uh-huh. I mean, I've got a certain level to maintain here with our listenership.
Bring the level down a little.
No?
Yes, please. Okay. It's funny because
the expectations are high. The bar is quite high.
I was laughing like a loon like 10 minutes ago. I think that just like zapped all my energy. What's wrong with me? So we are doing a color.
I mean, I've been called many things in my life. Not funny is not one of them.
I beg to differ. anyway, for dinner. Okay, can I say it now?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Fire away.
We're doing a colorful vegetable kugel, which is basically a baked casserole made with potatoes and zucchini and carrots.
All the fall.
All the fall.
Veggies.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll make a little chicken sausages with there or something, so we're not just eating a big bowl of veggies.
Not that there's anything wrong with it, but I mean, in this weather, I crave protein.
Before we jump into this book, let's talk about our show topic. I threw this out on the social media. Oh, I don't think I shared with the answers here. You'll have to look at my notes, and we can pass it back and forth. We'll switch off. So, this is the kind of professional production that our listeners have come to expect. Like no half step in here. If you were a competitive eater, what would your nickname be? Huh? Well, I would like to know, like, sub question, what would you eat for the competitive eating contest? Because my nickname kind of ties in with what food I would choose to.
See, so that's what I was kind of wondering. I was wondering, are we talking food specific, like hot dog eating contest? Are we talking oysters, pizza? I remember watching an oyster eating contest one year on TV, and they were sucking.
She's making wieners disappear. Wait, what? That didn't come out right.
Just call me the Gliz Gobbler.
All right, go ahead and you can read the first one. Then I'll need that back because I got answers to read too.
At Dom the home cook said, "Dommy salami."
I mean, I wouldn't be mad about eating a bunch of salami. Wait. Our friend Joseph P. said, "Don Stuffo." Sure. I like it. Go ahead and read the next one. Pick one, anyone.
So this one is yours?
No, don't read mine. What's wrong with you? It's right there in the body of the notes. You're looking at the bottom of the page.
I am looking at the bottom. Oh, let's see.
Oh, goodness.
I'm totally looking at the bottom of the...
Where did things go horribly wrong?
This is all your fault because you didn't share it with me, sir.
The cars fell off the wheel. The wheels fell off the car.
Let's see. Nancy M. said, "What you taco about?"
Oh, okay.
Sure. That's kind of a lot to get out, though.
Yep. I like Mike B's answer. The pierogi king. That's a good one.
So we know what he wants to eat in the contest.
Yes, and I'd pay to watch someone stuff pierogies in their mouth.
Oh, that's so doughy, though.
Yeah, lots of doughy. At Megan Anigans said, Megan eats again. A little play on her.
Oh, there you go. Yes.
Handle. That works. And then at Don't Crowd the Pan Cookbook. Ooh, we just worked through that book, too. Bottomless Pit. That was their answer.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. What did you have for yours?
Notorious P.I.G.
Yeah? What are you going to eat?
I don't know.
Oh, bacon? Bacon would be good.
Oh, there you go. That would be good.
I don't know if I could eat it.
But I think with the roof of my mouth, depending on how crispy it is, the roof of my mouth would get cut up.
You'd have grease running through your veins.
No donating blood for me.
Nope. Your blood flow would come to a complete stop. I could just see it, like it'd be like stop and go traffic. Like it'd just be like, and it would just like
my blood turns to jelly.
You'd have to like tap your arms to like get that stuff flowing again. All right, so mine. So I was trying to think of you know, something I would actually be able to tolerate binge eating, because that's not really my jam. And like a lot
I mean
of stuff,
really, whose jam is it?
I mean, there's lots of stuff that I enjoy eating, but not something I want to just eat massive quantities of.
Okay.
So what came to mind was watermelon, you know, because it's mostly water.
Yes.
And I could eat a ton of watermelon.
Yeah.
And not feel sick to my stomach.
Sure.
And then along those lines, I'd call myself the melon felon. Murdering all the watermelon. Right? Melon felon. I think we could do a whole TV show based around that character.
Oh my God, you crack me up because you think you're so funny.
Well, polls show that
oh my God,
people
dumb,
agree.
Dumb, be quiet.
I think that's all I had. Should we jump into this book? I think we've
to the one person who's still listening.
We've wasted enough of our listeners' precious time.
Everyone has been like, pause.
Yep. So
stop.
On to this book, World Central Kitchen. Chances are you already know who Jose Andreas is. He has an impressive resume and list of accomplishments, including several successful restaurants. In 2010, he founded World Central Kitchen, which is a global nonprofit that serves hundreds of millions of fresh meals to people impacted by natural disasters and other events, such as the current crisis in Ukraine and Gaza. This book is a collection of recipes from the various chefs and team members involved with the organization, and it celebrates the diversity of cuisines from all over the world. What else can we say? I mean, it's a great book. It's a great way for this organization to raise awareness for what they're doing, mm-hmm. but also raise some proceeds mm-hmm. for their organization.
Jose actually won a Nobel Peace Prize for humanitarian work for the World Central Kitchen in 2018.
I guess that's important to some people, but... Call me when he's ate his weight in watermelon.
Oh, and also, here's another little fact about him.
Yeah.
He was, you know the TV show Hannibal?
Yes.
He was the culinary director for that.
How do we get those jobs?
I know, right?
I mean, you know, being an accomplished chef is probably a good start.
Right.
They're not calling Johnny and Victoria to consult on some show.
The food scenes. If you have not seen Hannibal, please watch it. It's a really good show. First season especially, but the food scenes are insane.
That'd be a good podcast question. Like, I think we actually did ask that previously about like TV or movies that have like a, you know, like a food element to them,
yeah.
Or, you know, like mm-hmm. like Treme comes to mind, where they had consultants involved in the show so that all of the restaurant scenes and stuff were accurate and realistic.
Yeah,
and
I think pretty much any show that's like food based is going to have a consultant.
Netflix, we're available. That's all I'm saying. Give us a call. Should we talk about, why don't you mention the dishes that we made, and then we'll circle back and talk about them in detail?
Sure.
We'll get to some rankings.
We made braised pork al pastor. We did a choose-your-own-adventure sandwich, Reims kafta bil bandura, arroz con pollo a la Manolo,
Well
and
said.
And yes, my autocorrect kept changing it to Manny, I think. Something ridiculous. And then green chili pozole.
Perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about Mr. Al Pastor.
Al Pastor.
Pastor Al. My favorite. So braised pork. This actually has its roots in like Lebanon and mm-hmm. Middle Eastern cooking because it's a variation of the spit roasted shawarma that everyone is familiar with. Here it's tender pork marinated in spices, which are, you know, kind of decidedly, well, I guess they're not exclusively Latin in nature because there's, you know, some spices that get used in other cuisines as well, but like paprika, cumin, coriander, oregano, garlic, chili powders, cloves, cinnamon.
Okay.
Should I continue?
No.
Stop naming spices.
Oh, God.
Additionally, the recipe instructed you to make these small little like slits or cavities in the pork. And
you
then
had some real issues with that.
It was clumsy. It didn't work out. That was my only critique
Maybe
of this recipe.
Maybe it was recipe. User error.
It probably was. You're supposed to take a little paring knife and just make these little cavities in there that you could stuff chunks of pineapple in. My issue was they didn't really stay in there. They kind of like kept falling out. It did say in the recipe to my benefit that it said that if don't worry if they fall out, like it's not a big deal. So like they must have encountered the same issue when they were putting this recipe together.
Okay, excuses.
Yep. gotta work on my pineapple pork stuffing game. Any other thoughts on this? And then we just serve this with
Oh, well, hold on. First, yes. First you marinate it or you let it sit overnight.
True.
And then you add some braising liquid and it gets baked for 4 hours.
Low and slow.
Till it's super tender.
Yep. So, I mean, largely inactive recipe. Mm-hmm. It's just a lot of waiting. So if you've got the time, go for it. We had leftover braised pork, which we used for another dish, which mm-hmm. we'll discuss in a second.
And overall, I thought this was really tasty.
Like, yeah. And we served this with some rice and some warm tortillas. And I had no complaints.
We made
this.
Tacos.
Yeah. Is that what they're called? Only they had a word for putting some ingredients in a tortilla and eating it with your hands.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They need to come up with something like that. should we talk about this sandwich we made?
Yes.
This was a sandwich, my friend.
Yes.
Turkey bacon salami, cucumber, arugula, sharp cheddar sandwich. Just rolls off the tongue. Honey mustard.
I was going to say, you forgot the honey mustard, sir. So here's the thing. We used a gluten-free bread for this from this place called Atuvava Bakery.
In our neighborhood.
New discovery.
Yep.
We got a country loaf of bread. And the bread was delicious and perfect. And, oh, and I think we, what else did we get? We got a apple turnover, and it was so good. It was perfect.
We were kind of apprehensive about gluten-free bakeries from previous experiences. And this one, I think, kind of transformed us.
It was changed our amazing, mind. But they're only open for 2 days. They're 2 days now, maybe 3 days. I think they're trying to give it a third go.
Yep.
Anyway, this bread was perfect when we bought it. However, it does not freeze well.
As we found out.
We pulled it out of the freezer and it got a little bit crumbly.
Yes.
I feel like it's just kind of the nature of some gluten-free breads that don't have a lot of like a ton of preservatives and crap.
Like, well, and they do, gluten-free baking in general does require more moisture content. So I would imagine that it just by nature kind of dries out quicker. And
so anyway, we were able to make the sandwiches.
Got a great shot on the social media. It's an impressive hulk of a sandwich.
Well, the bread was kind of crumbling. So I don't know how we ended up doing it.
We made it work.
It was all very magical. And so anyway, for my dinner, I basically ate the sandwich fillings. I didn't even bother with the bread. It was pissing me off.
We just pulled out the knife and fork and ate it that way.
Knife and fork? Sir, I used my hands.
Yeah. They They don't see in the photos like how we eat some of this stuff after the photo's taken, because it's not always pretty. But this was great because the recipe itself, like you said at the intro, was kind of like a choose your own adventure. So it didn't really give you like very specific recipe per se. It was more that sediment in the bottom of that kombucha bottle that you're shaking up there. That's all like ending up in your body. That like sludge, that mystery sludge.
Good. I love a good mystery sludge.
Pickle juice sludge.
Why don't you be quiet?
That's what's going in your body.
Mystery sludge.
Yep. Anything else to say about this sandwich? But I like recipes like this where it just kind of gives you the broad strokes.
A little guideline.
Yeah, and like, you know, we've done stuff like this with salads and burgers and stuff like that before, where it's just like, use what you want. And mm-hmm. So we rooted around in the fridge, and this is what we came up with. And it was delicious, even if you couldn't eat the bread. Just eating sandwich filling. What is it called at that point if it's not a sandwich? Filling.
Filling.
What'd you have for dinner? Filling. All right. Anything else on that?
No.
Let's talk. How did you pronounce this? Reims Kofta Bil Bandura.
Yeah.
Bandura.
Yeah.
So this recipe was courtesy of Chef Reem Masil, who released a book, I believe it was last year or the year before, called Arabia. Mm-hmm. We actually featured it on our social media feed, and this was kind of like a guest contribution mm-hmm. to the book, and someone that presumably has been involved with World Central Kitchen. And this was probably my favorite
same
recipe
me
from
too
the book that we did, and also the most interesting one,
yeah,
just because of some of the treatments of the ingredients.
Mm-hmm. It was made with warm spices, so it was a little bit different than like a standard meatball and red sauce. And also, mm-hmm. the warm spices are in the rice and vermicelli, broken vermicelli mix, which is funny because I've never had that before, because in my head, I've always had this thing where like, oh, that's so many. That's too carby.
Can't
that's
combine
too,
carbs.
That's too starchy, you know? And I feel the same way, like potato and pizza and pasta and breadcrumbs. It's this weird thing that I have.
Well, and there have been times when we're throwing together like a pantry meal and we'll be like, should we make some rice or some noodles with this? And then in this situation, it's like, why not both? Which never occurred to us.
But the rice and vermicelli were super delicious.
And you know, for us, obviously the rice vermicelli is gluten free. Mm-hmm. You take those, you know, before you break it up, it resembles like spaghetti noodles. Mm-hmm. And so you take that and you break it up into small little like 1-2 inch pieces. And then those cook with the rice in the pot. Mm-hmm. And it just created like this really interesting textural element to this dish. So you had like the crunchy noodles, the rice, then, you know, the delicious meatballs that had all those spices in it. And by the warm spices, we're talking like allspice, sumac, cinnamon, nutmeg, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else to say about the kofta?
No, I really, really enjoyed it.
Worth it just to try it. That out of the book. Let's talk about this arroz con pollo.
Were you going to say polo?
Probably. Continue. So yep. Throughout the book, it gives you some guidance for scaling recipes. So obviously, with World Central Kitchen, most of the meals that they're preparing and serving are for enormous crowds mm-hmm. of people. But practically speaking, no one's going to buy a book like that. So they did scale the recipes back to serve, I think most of them serve like 4 to 6.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a recipe in particular where it would be like quite easy to scale it. So, you know, if you're feeding 4 people, if you're feeding 2 dozen, if you're feeding 100, you could easily adjust the recipe to suit your needs.
Oh, anyway, since I interrupted you, it's called arroz con pollo a la Manolo.
There you go. What did it try and correct it to for the spell check?
I like Manny or something.
Manny.
It was something, I was just like, what? Autocorrect.
So this was done in a Dutch oven mm-hmm. for our purposes. Comfort food at its finest.
This is this is a Puerto Rican dish, and it's got chicken, rice, cilantro, peas, roasted red pepper. First, you cook garlic, onion, sofrito, and then
sofrito is really good.
And then you add some tomatoes. Then you add chicken thighs and rice.
And I think the sofrito recipe, which is separate in the book, mm-hmm. the portion that it's going to yield is pretty large because I think we still have some of this sofrito in our freezer.
Yep.
So hopefully it freezes okay. Yeah, well, or otherwise we'll be putting it on some dry, crumbly, gluten-free bread and eating it that way.
No, we got rid of the bread.
Yes, we did. Anything else to say about this dish?
No, it's super quick and easy. It doesn't photograph the nicest.
We made it work. Yeah.
But
and then lastly, green chili pozole. So we're big fans of pozole. We had a favorite spot in Chicago when we lived there where that was kind of like our, you know, go-to winter comfort food.
It was called Pueblo Nuevo.
Yeah. Fantastic pozole. This one was something that we used the leftover braised pork from mm-hmm. the El Pastor that we had.
And this recipe calls for Hatch chilies. I do know one place that you can get them easily. Trader Joe's actually sells Hatch chilies. Or if you happen to have a Latino market around, they always have them too.
Right.
Maybe if you're super lucky, the ethnic portion of your grocery store will have some. But
So we cheated a little bit with this and did canned hominy.
Yes.
They do have instructions for using, you know, dried hominy that you have to soak overnight. We were pressed for time, so we just went with the easy. And because we had the leftover braised pork, this was actually a pretty easy dish
yes.
to throw together, which was great.
Ooh, I used to hate hominy as a kid.
I know you had some trauma, childhood trauma related to hominy.
I did.
You want to share with the class?
Okay, so this was when I was a very, very young child. It was when my dad was still alive. We were living in West Virginia, super dirt poor. My mom served us hominy. None of us knew what it was, and none of us liked it. It was just like this.
Was it just plain hominy?
It was plain hominy. Of course, it, there huh? was no seasoning on it.
Oh.
There was no seasoning
Nothing
on
fun
it.
Mixed in with it?
No.
Oh, just hominy.
And so we were all like, this is gross. And I remember putting some of it in my pant cuff, and we were all whining and moaning, and my mom got so mad because I think my sister was like, this is going to make me puke.
Were your plans to go outside later on, like excuse yourself and then like unroll your cuff and like spread the hominy? You know that.
I don't think I planned that far in advance.
I bet your pet raccoon would have ate the hominy.
I'm sure my dog Romper would have ate it.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
But so my sister was like, I'm going to puke. So my mom got super pissed off and she's like, fine, then go in the bathroom and eat if you're going to get sick. And so me, my sister, and my dad went into the, we picked up our plates and went into the bathroom and ate.
How was that for you? I guess you showed her.
No, because there's nothing more appetizing than eating.
No awareness
by the toilet.
That there's three people, including an adult, sitting in the bathroom eating hominy. But I guess you showed your mom. She learned her lesson.
Oh, my God. It's funny because, like, I never really framed it that way until right now.
Yep.
It was like, it was just our little act of rebellion, but how gross.
Yep. Bathroom hominy.
Ew.
Anything else on this dish? It was good. I like a good pozole.
Yes.
And, I mean,
been a minute since we've had pozole.
Well, the seasons are changing. Pozole is not something I want to eat in the middle of summer.
No.
I'll put a bowl of hot pozole. But now it's soup season here. Soup season has arrived in Minneapolis. Okay, before we get to our rankings, let's discuss the most critical Amazon reviews for this book. Thankfully, there were not many at all. There were no one-star reviews. So I picked out a couple that I thought were like, maybe valid or not so valid critiques. Let's start with the first one. What you got?
2 out of 5 stars. This, it doesn't say the username.
Cat Gore. I don't know what that means.
But. Oh, I thought that was just some weird typo before.
Oroz Canpolo El Manolo. That person. Okay.
Okay.
Go for it.
So they gave it 2 out of 5 stars. They said, a very nice book, but there seemed to be more in the way of stories than recipes. The pictures were beautiful and the WCK is inspiring, but I was looking for a cookbook. Salute, Jose Andre. They dropped the S. Andreas, for your work.
And then Danobob gave it 4 out of 5 stars, but they did have some critique in here. It said, a good cause, not a lot of recipes that I could see, but I can't cook anyway.
I don't know why, but that...
Sir, get out of the cookbook section.
That cracks me up so...
Doesn't matter. I can't cook. I mean, strangely, I mean... Okay, so this cookbook will definitely kind of falls into that category of... Not unlike a cookbook for a particular restaurant. So there's... Of course, there's like lots of well-known restaurants and maybe not so well-known restaurants that... have released their own cookbook featuring recipes. And I think you have to kind of look at it through that lens because, of course, there's a story to tell behind this amazing organization and all the work that they're doing. And so, yes, throughout the book, there are going to be different profiles of people, places, ingredients, things like that. But there were quite...
Yeah, there were quite a few
Number of recipes. Yeah. It's not just like a book that's got like 5 recipes or something. Mm-hmm. Like, so
it's not like a, you I know how sometimes there will be like those like essays or whatever, and then there's a just a recipe thrown in.
Right.
It wasn't. It's not like that at all.
Yeah, we've worked through plenty of books like that. But yeah, so I thought that was kind of an odd critique. But hey, point taken. I just don't agree with it. All right, let's move on to our rankings. Food photography and styling. What'd you have, Victoria?
Okay, so I gave it a 4. Without a doubt, this book does have more candid and human interest photos than food photos. Mm-hmm. The recipe photos were obviously shot and styled separately.
Yes.
The lighting, I really adored. It was, for the most part, it was like a harder lighting kind of... Like, it looked like it was outside. I don't know if it was actually shot outside or if that was studio magic. I can never do a hard light with my own lights, so.
Studio magic.
But then again, I don't really have a studio. I have a pop-up box light.
A rusty bench next to the barbells.
The lighting was very attractive to me. A lot of the shots, most of the shots were overhead. There were a few... from the front. However, the last chapter, which is the desserts chapter, the majority of them were head-on shots. I felt like the photos had a really good sense of texture with the backgrounds. There was wood, concrete, fabric, and the food looked really tasty due to the plating and the accoutrements, because the recipes are really simple, but then when you have these extra things, you can kind of, it gives the viewer like, I can see what this can become when you put all these things on there.
Right.
I thought the photography was great.
And Kristen Teague is the photographer, we should point out. Anything else?
Nope. What did you do?
I also gave it a 4. Most of the recipes were shot at like a 45-degree angle, and they had kind of unfussy preparation. And by that,
45?
I mean, yeah, like they were kind of not... overhead.
No, see, to me, they mostly felt overhead.
No, if you look through the book, I would say a good half of them were like 45-degree angle shots, because I thought that was kind of an interesting creative choice.
No.
You can look through it. I looked through to confirm, so I know what I'm speaking of.
You just, we're like totally contradicting each other, because I was like, wow, that's a lot of overhead shots. And then I got to the last.
Maybe half were like overhead and the other half were 45. But the 45 is like a creative choice that I don't see made as often. Like oftentimes with the food photography, it is like overhead looking down on it or like looking straight on, like head on it. And this one was kind of like in between that. The recipe photos, while... totally fine, and I appreciated them. They don't really tell the story of this book as much as those like editorial and action shots do, and that's what I found like more interesting is all these photos from the front lines. And so it's like the people that are involved with the organization, the people they're feeding, the recipe photos with their like handmade ceramics and interesting choice of like flatware and attractive linens. They do a good job of translating how these recipes would look in a home kitchen rather than the kind of like assembly line service for hundreds of people.
Right.
And so I thought that was obviously like a conscious choice, but also a worthwhile choice.
The food was more attractive than it needed to be for like, as like the food as, no, that's, that sounds wrong. The way that the food is probably, the food I'm sure is not presented as fancy as it is.
No,
made
because
in
you're
book.
Doing it in such so, a large scale and there's like an urgency.
Right, I
to it. Yeah.
I understand that.
Yeah. No, we're talking okay. about the same thing. I'm just saying like I understood that they're not just gonna like film these dishes in a
be like here
cardboard
plate it
container
up,
and
flop
and
it
be
down.
Like, this is what we're
yeah.
serving. So yeah. So they did a good job of translating how it would look in a home kitchen mm-hmm. as opposed to them
yes.
serving it en masse to people. So four.
Okay. What did you give the design and layout?
I gave that a four as well. Mm-hmm. Uniquely, the recipes are divided into sections that are separated by the organization's core values.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of the chapter titles have words like empathy, urgency, adaptation, hope, community, like things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then the recipe subtitles further illuminate on that single word. So in the case of like urgency, they would have like sandwiches, arepas, and food on the go. So some thought went into selecting recipes that would kind of
fit with their core values.
Yes. Absolutely. There's a foreword by Stephen Colbert.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, probably the only cookbook foreword that he's written, I would assume.
I don't know.
But it was great. Who doesn't love Stephen Colbert?
I'm sure plenty of people.
I don't think I want to know any of those
right?
people. There's a pantry staples section, which is pretty common in cookbooks. The recipes obviously were scaled back to serve 4 to 6 people. But the recipes themselves are very clear and concise.
Mm-hmm.
They're separated by the different components of the dish. So, for instance, if there's like a stew, but then there's like this spice paste that you need to make, they have those
mm-hmm.
separate. I know you appreciate that. Scattered throughout the book, and maybe this is where those Amazon reviews got kind of fixated on, but there's going to be like stories and profiles of particular people and places which kind of lend a human element
mm-hmm.
to this book, as well as underscoring the core objective of World Central Kitchen. But I think that's valuable information to include in the book. So it didn't bother me at all, and it wasn't really like a critique from my perspective. But I guess I can understand how maybe if someone's just casually flipping through the book, they focus too much on that and then kind of overlook the recipes that
yeah.
are throughout the pages. But four.
Okay.
What'd you have?
I gave it a four as well. Let's see. My notes contain all the stuff about the chapter titles and stuff. Also in the introduction, in keeping up with like accessibility for the recipes, there's a small section. It's an explainer of certain ingredients and more easily accessible substitutions for them, which, great. I think
yeah.
That's important too. The layout is simple. It's a double column. The right-hand side has the recipe title and the head note. One thing that I noticed in Cooking Method is there's a lot of guidance, a lot of descriptors of for what's going to happen when something is cooking. As you cook the chicken, the skin should turn brown and it may snap and crackle some grease in the pan, you know, like
that's just legalese. They're trying to protect themselves from an expensive lawsuit.
But I think it's really important because I feel like a lot of cookbooks don't give you these cues of sounds
right.
and visuals.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah,
it's helpful.
With the ingredient list, the actual ingredients are in bold font.
Yes.
Did you notice that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It also gives a serving size. which I appreciate. And mm-hmm. then you can also, because some of these dishes have a serving size of like 8. So, I mean, if you still need to scale it back further, you can do so.
And on kind of a piggybacking on that, one thing that I noticed from my reading of the book was they included weighted measurements for any of the baking recipes, but for any of the non-baking recipes, they just had like the regular, you know, volume mm-hmm. measurements. And they explained that, you know, it's not, when you're feeding a large group of people like that, it's not as critical to have these ingredients be so precise. Yeah. But in the case of baking, it's quite necessary, mm-hmm. especially when you're scaling it up to feed that many people. So I just thought that was kind of interesting. But then you also have to take into consideration that some food is going to lose volume mm-hmm. when you cook. Like
when you're calling for meat, yeah. meat shrinks.
And it's like, you know, so you start with, you know, 100 pounds of this protein and it might yield 70 pounds by the time you're done cooking it.
Yeah.
And it's like all these considerations that you don't even really think about when you're just cooking for a couple people. But
well, and conversely, like if you cook like lentils or rice,
yeah,
the volume increases.
Yeah. So that was kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. Degree of difficulty. What'd you have?
I gave it a 2.
All right.
I feel like that's kind of like the nature of the book. The recipes are meant to be easy and accessible. The ingredients have been adapted to be easily available. And like I said before, the method instruction is really thorough.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it kind of takes some of that fear out of cooking. And I feel like if you're a little bit curious about other cuisines, this is kind of a good way to dip. This would be kind of a good way to dip your toe into it. The recipes are not authentic.
No one wants to find a toe in their food that they're being served. Just wanted to point that out.
But then again, this is not a book that I would go to. Well, I'll get to that later.
Ooh, well, little no. teaser, little no. teaser.
I was going to say that if I was going to be like, I want to make like arroz con pollo, this wouldn't be a book that I would go to find that recipe.
Okay, fair.
You know, I would go to something more authentic.
Yeah, I remember seeing it at the beginning where it was talking about the pantry ingredients and some of the stuff they use, like asafoetida,
mm-hmm.
which I thought was kind of interesting because that's something that perhaps some people would not have in their pantry. Did it have a substitution for that?
I'd
say like to just use some like juice that had accumulated in your garbage can.
Oh, it smells bad, but it's delicious.
It's funky.
Yeah.
It's right up there with fish sauce. So you gave it a 2?
Yes.
Anything else on degree of difficulty?
I don't think so.
I gave it a 2 as well. Ooh, look at us. Simpatico. The skills required to effectively execute a dish will be largely dependent on the individual recipe. However, I don't think there's anything that requires more than just basic cooking skills. This isn't that type of book, and you got to be able to like whip this stuff out pretty easily. Most of the recipes contain less than a dozen ingredients, so that makes it pretty easy for, you know, accumulating the ingredients and executing the recipes. Don't expect anything too complex or difficult within the pages. It's not really the vibe of this book. So, solid 2.
Okay.
Lastly, taste.
What did you give it?
I gave it a 4.
Okay.
All the recipes were delicious and even better the following day as leftovers, in the case of like that braised pork dish mm-hmm. and the chicken dish. We even discovered some new tastes and methods, such as combining the rice and the short sections of pasta in the kofta recipe. So, 4.
Okay.
What'd you have?
I gave it a 3.75.
Whoa, we're going that way now.
Everything we made from the book was solidly tasty. Mm-hmm. This is not a book I would buy to like expecting like mind-blowing culinary masterpieces.
Fair.
You know?
Yeah. Based on those reviews, rankings, is this a buy, borrow, or banish for you?
Well, I would say buy it because the proceeds go to WCK.
Exactly. Same. Come on. It's for a good cause.
Yes.
All right. And we've now arrived at our fan favorite Gastro Obscura section.
Oh, sure.
Exploring the weird and wonderful culinary traditions, experiences, and ingredients from around the globe. This is another segment that I need a little catchy little jingle or
yeah, you do.
Incidental music for. I'll come up with that.
I agree.
Maybe some Van Halen guitar playing.
No.
I'll work on that.
Warm up your fingers and do some eruption.
Yep.
Oh, that sounded really bad.
That did. Maybe we don't do that. No eruption from my fingers. That's
not what I was. Oh, okay. You're a dumb dumb.
Gross. All right. What you got this week?
Okay. So we are talking about Brownie Mary.
What?
Okay, Mary Jane Rathbun has been compared to Betty Crocker and Mrs. Fields, but her signature ingredient was cannabis.
Maybe she should be compared to Cheech and Chong.
So Mary Jane was born in 1921. She spent 50 years working as a waitress. In the early 1970s, Mary started a side hustle selling pot brownies.
Wow, she was ahead of the curve.
Yes, she was.
1970s, huh?
Yep. She advertised them on homemade flyers that declared her brownies were magically delicious.
Oh.
Said flyers are decorated with like squiggles and stars. But this method of advertising soon alerted the police. They showed up to her door. She had thousands of pot brownies. Wow. She was arrested.
Sounds like more than a side hustle. That's a lot of brownies.
So she was arrested. She was sentenced to hundreds of hours of community service for the sale of
Sounds like she was doing that already.
Well, okay, here you go. For the sale of illegal drug. From her service, Mary became involved with cancer patients and AIDS patients in the 1980s.
Okay.
She referred to the AIDS patients as her kids, and she began baking brownies for them to help alleviate with pain and stimulate appetites. 1986, San Francisco General Hospital named her the Volunteer of the Year. She was arrested in 1982 and then again in 1992. Ultimately, she was acquitted of all charges. August 1925, 1992 is officially declared Brownie Mary Day.
Nice.
Yes. Mary never shared her recipe, stating that if pot was legalized, she would sell the recipe and buy an old Victorian house for all of her kids.
See, she's ahead of the curve.
Mm-hmm.
If only she had, you know, waited it out.
I know,
for
right?
Another 20 years 20 or so.
Years. She passed of a heart attack in 1999, and hundreds of people showed up to memorialize her at a vigil.
Oh,
yeah.
That's very sweet.
Yes. Okay. If you enjoyed the show, please rank and review us. You can follow us on our social media at @we_cook_books. That is our Instagram, and our Facebook is at @wecookbooks.
Okay. I got a few jokes for you.
Oh, geez.
We're gonna end this on a high note, and you know, because it's been so long, I feel like I gotta like get these out there and make up for lost time.
Uh-huh.
So I'll start with this one.
Dazzle me, Balmer.
What is the speech before a meal called in France? French toast. Right?
Sure.
See, that was more. That was more of like a humorous observation than like an actual like, haha, grab your stomach joke.
Was it though?
Yeah.
No.
Did it at least give you a little smile?
No.
A little like turned your neutral facial expression into like a slight smile, like it started creep. Like.
Okay, well, number
this
one.
This is like the amuse bouche joke.
Number one, I have resting bitch face, so there's no neutral
that's not
face.
True. All right, this is the next one. This is where I'm going to bring it on home.
Still waiting to be dazzled.
I've started telling everyone about the benefits of eating dried grapes. It's really all about raising awareness.
So dumb.
Ooh, this is a very timely one because it was just Halloween. So this is kind of like on those on that tip. What do you call a group of witches cooking simple recipes? An easy bake coven. Halloween funny.
Oh my God.
Oh, I tried.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks for sticking with us. Thanks for your patience, everyone.
We promise we will not leave you hanging.
We're back at it.
We're going to be real adults.
Better than before.
We're going to be responsible.
So there you go. Thanks for listening.
Stay safe.
Stay hungry.